So once again, let's get started. So first of all, I'd like to remind the audience to keep yourself muted and turn the video off. And so the best way to ask a question is to raise your hand or use chat. So today's speaker is Shinsei Ryu. So Shinsei is very well known in our community. So he was a professor at Illinois, then Chicago, and just a couple of months ago moved to Princeton. So Shinsei is probably best known for his work on topological phases of matter, but he is generally interested in properties of condensed matter systems which are uniquely quantum mechanical, so such as topology, entanglement. And so today he's going to tell us about some quantum phenomena in non-equilibrium dynamics. So Shinsei, please, you can start.
Thank you, Anton, for a nice introduction, and thank you for the invitation. It's my pleasure to speak here. So today I want to talk about dynamical process in quantum many-body systems. And the I think recently there's a surge of interest in these type of problems. I think it's partly because of some experiments which used to be very difficult in solid states context, they now became available. So we can study dynamics of isolated quantum systems, and we can ask questions such as if thermalization, when and under which condition thermalization takes place, and how the quantum entanglement in such system can propagate in real time, and so on and so forth. This type of questions has been discussed over years, in particular in a few body systems, or maybe just in a quantum mechanical setting. We can discuss, distinguish dynamics which are described by integrable systems. Or in contrast, we can also have a chaotic systems where dynamics is fairly complicated. What I'm going to talk about today is, in some sense, the quantum field theory analog of such questions, such as so how quantum dynamics can be affected by integrability or maybe the complexity of the underlying quantum many-body system. So defining for example, chaotic behaviors, it has been at least more discussed in the context of few body systems, but there's a kind of challenge to discuss many body quantum systems and their dynamics. Today I will take class of systems, quantum field theory, namely two-dimensional, one plus one-dimensional conformal field theories, and we want to distinguish different kinds of conformal field theories in terms of their complexity or quote-unquote chaoticity in their dynamics. So if you have any questions, please feel free to interrupt at any time. Before we start, I want to introduce my collaborators. So my talk is based on two recent papers where we discuss a global quench in one paper, and in another paper we discuss a local quench. But there are a series of other papers which I worked with these people. So Mao Tian Tan is my graduate student. He's graduating next spring. Jonah Kudra-Fram is another graduate student who also worked on this problem. Yuya Kusuki is a graduate student at the Kyoto University, but we joined our force to work on different quantum entanglement measures in conformal field theories. Raimei Ni was a postdoc at UChicago. He's now a postdoc at UIUC, and we worked together on the problem of operator entanglement. And Masahiro Nozaki is another postdoc who was at Chicago, but he's now in RIKEN. Okay, so these are people who really did these great works. So let me start with a brief introduction. I already said something, but I also want to refresh your memory, in particular, what could happen in quantum many-body dynamics when dynamics is sufficiently complex. Okay, so one known phenomena is this summarization. So we start from isolated quantum system with some initial condition, but even in the isolated quantum system, after some time evolution, let's say just unitary time evolution, states start to look like a thermal after some time. For example, if you look at the part of the system and look at the reduced density matrix, it may be just given by a Gibbs ensemble, where this H is the energy density. So this is just the exponential of the energy within this region A, and there may be some effective temperature here, which may depend on such as something like initial condition. Except for this temperature, what is striking about this phenomena is that memory of initial state is almost completely washed out. So just from here, it's so universal. It just gives a state. So we cannot recover the initial state. So one may say, oh, wait, what's going on? Because quantum process here is just a unitary time evolution operator. So how can we lose some information? Key here is, of course, is that I'm only looking at this local region in the entire system. So the information of the initial state, if this unitary time evolution is complicated enough, it may be delocalized over the entire space. So therefore, just from the local information, we may not be able to recover the initial state. So this is sometimes called quantum information scrambling, and that's closely tied with the concept of the thermalization. Okay, so once again, these type of phenomena may happen if the dynamics is sufficiently complicated. For example, if this time evolution is given by something like integrable models, then there's the a set of conserved quantities, and therefore these conserved quantity may remember the initial information of the initial quantum state. Okay. So today I want to discuss this quantum information scrambling by using quantum entanglement or quantum entanglement measure as a probe. Okay. So, for example, I will define the set of quantum entanglement measures of my interest later. But for example, we can look at the time evolution of the von Neumann entanglement entropy associated to a particular region A, as in the previous slide. And then we can follow the time dependence of the entanglement entropy. Okay. So it may be looking like this. So it may take, it may show some more complicated behaviors. And it has been verifies that the different kinds of dynamics can be detected by looking at the time dependence of the entanglement entropy. For example, many body localization can be detected this way. So this is actually an experiment where they did exactly what I said. So they measure quantum entanglement or entanglement entropy from a given interval of one-dimensional optical lattice. And then in this regime, we see a very slow propagation of the entanglement. It's a logarithmic in time. So this is considered to be the indication of the many body localization. Okay, so yeah, so entanglement measure, it's a, for me, it's a very convenient theoretical tool, but at the same time, these quantities are also experimentally accessible. So what I'm going to talk about today is about entanglement measures beyond this simple entanglement entropy that can potentially distinguish different kinds of conformal field theories, okay? Right, so like I said in the beginning, discussing quantum chaos in many-body quantum system is somewhat challenging, at least more challenging than in few-body systems. Like in historically, study of chaotic dynamics was studied by using random matrix theories, for example. But initially, random matrix theory was introduced as a way to describe complicated nuclei. Okay, so there can be a lot of nucleus within a given nuclei, but it's still a few-body system. Okay. So today we are interested in extended many-body quantum systems. And I will study conformal field theories as a particular examples. And then we will discuss the dynamical processes in conformal field theories in two dimensions. One may ask, wait, in conformal field theories in two dimensions, there are infinitely many conserved charges. It's a conformal symmetry in two dimension is infinite. So aren't we actually discussing integrable systems? One may wonder that, but as it turns out, even with infinite conformal symmetry, we can still distinguish various kinds of conformal field theories, okay? So I'm going to talk about two classes of conformal field theories. So one is known as rational conformal field theories, and the other is called pure conformal field theories, okay? So rational CFDs are, well, I can use some examples such as free fermion theories or minimal models. So these conformal field theories are in some sense simple because there's the only finite number of primary fields. So this is the type of CFDs which may correspond to non-chaotic systems. In contrast, I will also discuss something we call pure conformal field theories. So for these theories, well, technically by this we mean there's no extra conserved quantities than Virasoro operators. So in particular, if the central charge is very large, let's say infinity, this type of theory may allow us to use a semi-classical holographic descriptions. So we are going to contrast these two type theories. And so rational theories are integrable theories in my mind. And the pure conformal field theories are, it's a conformal field series, but they are in some sense chaotic as we are going to discuss, okay. So to discuss or to distinguish these theories, we need a probe which is slightly more sophisticated than the entanglement and entropy for a single interval. So entanglement entropy for a single interval was enough to distinguish, for example, many body localized state and the conformal field theories, for example. So for many body localized phase, entanglement grows logarithmically in time. For conformal field theories, entanglement entropy grows linearly in time after Grover quench. So just from there, we can distinguish these two theories. But now we want to make a distinction within conformal field theories. So we are going to look at entanglement negativity and the entanglement, something we call reflected entropy, in addition to entanglement entropy. So we have more quantities to discuss now, and they are useful to distinguish different kinds of conformal field series. Okay. Right. So I want to say a few more words about rational versus pure conformal field theories. So as we are learning, as we are learning during these studies, well, basically we realize that these two kinds of theories, they are associated to two kinds of effective descriptions of entanglement propagation. For rational conformal field theories, as it turned out, their entanglement dynamics is described by something called the quasi-particle picture, okay? On the other hand, for pure conformal field theories, or chaotic conformal field theories, as we will show, quasi-particle picture breaks down, okay? So then it's more you know, complicated situations. But as it turns out, there's another effective description which has been developed in the context which is outside of conformal field theory. So that paradigm is called membrane picture or line tension picture. And this has been studied or developed in the context of random unitary circuit. Okay, so let me say a few words about for these two effective descriptions. So quasi-particle picture, basically we have a independent non-interacting quasi-particles. And if you make a dynamical process such as a quantum quench, let's say we do something to your quantum state here at time t equal to zero, after that we produce, because we excite our system, we produce the free propagating quasi-particles, okay? So we can draw many pictures. So quasi-particles, they propagate ballistically, and in conformal field theory, they all propagate at the speed of light. So these, we have these light cones. And so to calculate or compute some entanglement-related quantities, all we need to do in this picture is to keep track of the trajectories of these quasi-particles. And then, for example, if the quasi-particle is produced here and if they propagate, and then this pair of quasi-particle, one goes into region A and the other go into region B. So then now region A and B share something like a Bell pair. That then we get a contribution to the entanglement entropy. So this is the quasi-particle picture first discussed. I didn't put the citation, but this was first discussed by Calabrese and Cardi in their famous paper on the quantum quench in conformal field theory. But as we will see, this quasi-particle picture explains entanglement dynamics in rational conformal field theories, but it will break down once we go to pure conformal field theories, okay? So then instead, we have to use the alternative picture, which is this line tension picture or membrane theory, which has been established in this random unitary circuit models. And these are toy models for quantum information spreading. So there's no Hamiltonian, but we just act with the set of local unitary operators at time t equals one here, and at the next time slice, I act with different local unitary operators, and we just continue, okay? So entanglement propagation in random unitary circuit has been described in terms of this Rhine tension picture. So in this picture, we have this space time diagram. Basically, we draw a line, okay? And then the idea is that this line, if you integrate the tension of this line, it gives you the quantum entanglement, such as entanglement entropy. So unlike quasi-particle pictures where we rely on point-like object, which freely propagates, here we use something more non-local. We use this one-dimensional object in this dimension, and we can compute entanglement once we know the tension of the brain or this line, okay? So in the past, we compare this line tension picture and the entanglement entropy or something related, which we compute from in conformal field theory. And we actually saw very well agreement. So this is our calculation. And this quantity is called operator entanglement, but details are not very important for now. So for holographic conformal field theories, namely pure conformal field theory with large central charge, we did this calculation. And then we see for various configurations, entanglement entropy decreases as a function of time, operator entanglement decreases as a function of time. And then we see some kinks. Sometimes this show up changes at some particular time. But later we discovered that this is exactly what we see in random unitary circuit. So this is random unitary circuit with very small bond dimension, just dimension two. But even in such a very low bond dimension random unitary circuit, we see very similar behavior. And then this behavior is described by, in particular, how this change in the slope, it is described by this Rhine tension picture, okay? Just for the reference, if I look at the integrable quantum field theory, conformal field theory, for the same setup, the how entanglement, operator entanglement changes, it's completely different, okay? We see plateau, for example, here, but it's completely absent in this more complicated conformal field theories and random unitary circuit. Okay. So this is a background. So we have been interested in distinguishing these two types of conformal field theories to learn something about many body chaos or maybe quantum field theory version of chaos. Okay. So today I want to talk about global and local quantum quench, and in particular, time evolution of various entanglement measures. Okay, so it's not just entanglement entropy. So I'm going to discuss a mutual information for two intervals and the entanglement negativity and reflected entropy. Okay, another quantity which may be also interesting and closely related is called odd entropy, but I won't discuss odd entropy today. Okay, so these correlation measures, I'm going to give a more precise definition in a minute. These measures are designed to be good to capture quantum entanglement for mixed quantum state, whereas the entanglement entropy is a proper entanglement measure only for pure quantum states. Okay, so that's something which distinguishes the entanglement entropy and the negativity and reflected entropy. Okay, so one may ask, by looking at multiple quantum entanglement measure beyond just a single interval entanglement entropy, what can we learn about dynamics of conformal field theories? So that's an interesting question, and we don't have a full answer yet, but what we realize is that if we actually study the relation between various quantities, we can see how yeah, how quasi-particle picture emerges and how quasi-particle picture breaks down in these theories. So we are going to focus on one thing. We are going to focus on the relation between these different quantities. Okay. Good. So I think this is like a introductory part. Is there any questions so far? Good. So then I move on to slightly more precise definition of our problem. So first of all, I'm going to study two kinds of quench. One is global quantum quench, and the other is a local operator quench. So let me start with the global quench. So for global quantum quench, I start from some initial state, and this is typically taken as something like a product state. It's a very short range entangled quantum state. And then we will quench into the conformal field theory dynamic. So this E2 minus ITH is, so here H is the conformal field theory Hamiltonian, okay. Moreover, following the recognition by Carbres and Cardi, we are going to use a conformal boundary state as my initial quantum state. So this B is some boundary state. And then we usually add this kind of smearing factor. This factor controls the amount of the energy you inject to the system by this quench process. Okay, so this is my quantum state as a function of time. And then for this system, we are going to calculate mutual information and entanglement negativity and reflected entropy, okay? We are going to consider two intervals here, A and B, and they may be separated by some distance D, or it can be just adjacent to each other. But anyway, we have these parameters. So the LA is a length for this interval A, and LV is a length for interval V, and we have some distance D, okay? We trace out degrees of freedom outside of these intervals, okay? And then we are left with the reduced density matrix for region A and B, and it also depends on time, okay? So with this reduced density matrix, we can discuss mutual information, negativity, and reflected entropy. Okay, I will introduce these quantities in a minute. So this is for global quench. For local operator quench, we prepare time-dependent state starting from a ground state of the system. So this is the ground state of my 1 plus 1D system. And then I hit this state by some local operator, let's say this operator O, at some point in space. So let's just call it zero. So, oops. Yeah, so I, for example, I hit my state by this operator O here at the origin, okay? And after that, we let this state evolve in time, again, by using conformal field theory Hamiltonian, okay? This is convenient normalization, sorry, regularization. So I also add this imaginary part to my real time, just for convenience. And I will mostly interested in the limit where this epsilon goes to zero anyway, okay? So this is my time dependent state. So this process is called local operator quench. And once again, I can focus on two regions, two intervals in my one-dimensional chain, and then I integrate over other degrees of freedom. Okay, so then I get a reduced density matrix for these two intervals, A and B. Okay, and then we can discuss various entanglement measure. Okay, so this is a setup. Okay, now as for quantities of our interest, first thing I am interested in is the mutual information. So I consider this particular combination. So this is the entanglement entropy or Rennie entropy for region A. And this is the entanglement entropy for region B, but I subtract entropy for A union B. So this is a mutual information. This is actually Reni version, but I can also discuss the von Neumann limit of this operator, this quantity. So this is the quantities of interest number one. The second quantity of my interest is this logarithmic negativity. So in this logarithmic negativity, we once again start with reduced density matrix for region A and B, but then I take a transpose only for region B. So this process operation is called a partial transpose. Okay, so if I have a operator like this, I only exchange the matrix element for region B. So J and L here, they are swapped, but matrix, I don't know, matrix index for region A, they are intact. Okay. And once we do that, we take a trace, we take a trace norm of this quantity and take a log. So this is called logarithmic negativity. Okay. So in quantum information theory context, this is the one good quantum entanglement measure for mixed state, in that it is monotonically decreasing under any local operation and the classical correlation. So that's what we expect for quantum correlation. So quantum correlation is something you cannot create locally by acting with unitaries locally. Okay. For mixed quantum state, entanglement entropy is not monotone under LOCC. Okay. So this is the second quantity of our interest. It is designed such that it captures only quantum part of correlations. Okay. The third quantity of my interest is called reflected entropy. Okay. So reflected entropy is defined as follows. So we start from some density matrix for A union B. Okay. But we can actually write down a pure state which corresponds to this state. So we can, so we say we can purify this state by adding additional degrees of freedom. Okay, so this is, for example, commonly done in the context of thermofield double state, where we have a Gibbs state, which is density matrix, but once you double your Hilbert space, you can write down the pure quantum state, which reduces to the initial original density matrix once you trace out the state you added by hand. Okay. So here's a kind of short description. So we start from original Hilbert space consisting of part A and part B. I double total degrees of freedom. So I get new degrees of freedom A star and B star. And in this enlarged Hilbert space, I have a pure quantum state. Okay, so this is what this purification operation means. But once we form now a pure quantum state, then I trace out, these two regions, B and B star, and I talk about reduced density matrix in this part, A union A star. So that's what that defines the reflected entropy between A and B. Okay. So this entropy, this quantity was introduced by Datta and Faulkner, mostly in the context of holographic duality. They are looking for particular quantity which has a nice geometrical meaning in the bulk. This is the, so as it turns out, this state, this quantity has a nice geometrical object in the bulk, as the entanglement entropy is described by the minimal surface area in the bulk. So we are going to study this quantity for our conformal field series. Okay. Yeah, so this quantity, it captures both quantum and classical correlations, and it is usually bigger than the mutual information between region A and B. Okay, good. Okay, so yeah, so I think I said something about the relation between different quantum measures. So yeah, one may wonder, why do we study all these different quantum entanglement measures? Well, first of all, as I said earlier, and as I will perhaps explain later, single interval entanglement entropy isn't enough to distinguish different kinds of conformal field theories. So I have to clearly go beyond this simple probe. But why do we study, you know, mutual information? It's easier to measure. So why do we care about all other quantum entanglement measure? So then I want to introduce this observation by Aluva and Calabrese. So they noticed there that there's a simple relation between different quantum entanglement measures if the dynamics is given by the quasi-particle picture. For example, in their 2018 paper, they wrote down this relation where entanglement negativity is simply related to mutual information at Reni index 1/2, once you put this 1/2 coefficient. That's plausible because in quasi-particle picture, you know, only thing we care about is the free propagation with the quasi-particles, right? So we can use this quasi-particle picture to compute entanglement negativity, mutual information, and in fact also reflected entropy as well. But within this picture, since the entanglement is just carried by this pair of quasi-particles, we simply just get the proportionality relations between among different quantum entanglement measures. Okay. So then idea is that to diagnose chaoticity of your theory, maybe we can look at the relation between these various quantities, and for chaotic systems, these relations verified by quasi-particle picture, these relations are going to break down, okay? So that may be viewed as the signature of the chaotic quantum dynamics, okay? So that is the motivation. Okay. Good. Is there any questions so far? Okay. So if there's no question, I proceed to our result. So I will first focus on global quantum quench, and I will perhaps mostly focus just on global quantum quench, but I make a comment. Brief comment for local operator quench as well. Okay. So this is a result of the calculation for reflected entropy as a function of time. So remember we have a three parameters which controls our setup. So have a length of region A, which is LA, length of region B, which is LB, and D. Represent the distance between these two intervals, okay? So what happens for this refracted entropy is that, okay, it starts with zero. Okay, so here I'm measuring actually the increase of the refracted entropy from the ground state value, okay? So it starts from zero by definition, but after some time, it starts to increase and it develops a plateau and decreases and goes back to zero again. Okay, so this is a result for generic rational conformal field series. Okay, and this is completely described by quasi-particle picture. Okay, once again, if we look at this picture, so let's say we focus on the pair of quasi-particles created within this region, this dotted region. Between A and B. So at time t equals zero, we produce a pair of quasi-particles, okay? And if we wait some time, these two particles, they eventually go into region A and region B respectively, and they are going to be shared by these two regions, okay? So that's how we see this increase in this refractive entropy. But before that happens, we need to wait a little bit because particle created, you know, they do not go into region A and B both. That does not happen instantaneously. So we have to wait a little bit. So that's why we see this initial region where we don't see anything. Okay, but once these quasi-particles start to be shared by these two regions, we see the increase of this entanglement measure. And then eventually, if there's no more quasi-particles or pair of quasi-particles entering in these two regions, we observe a plateau. And then once all quasi-particles leave these two regions, we see zero value for this entanglement measure. We have a similar result for the negativity, but I don't want to plot two things at the same time. So I just focus on just the reflected entropy. But for negativity, the result is basically very similar, okay? Once again, I think it's kind of understandable because, at least for this case, because of the quasi-particle picture, okay? So this is the result one. But now we want to move on to pure conformal field theory. So yeah, this is what we just said. Right, maybe one more thing I could add is that this calculation, you know, which we did. In this calculation, we don't assume, of course, quasi-particle picture. We just do honest conformal field theory calculations. And then as it turns out, this result within rational conformal field theory is rather universal, okay? And in fact, we see that this result is only sensitive to something we call right or cone singularity. So this is the limit where once we take this effective regularization parameter, which put in the process to, if we send this regularization parameter code to zero, if we take that limit, this result is very universal, okay? Okay, so then it agrees, it actually agrees with quasi-particle picture, okay? However, once we move on to pure conformal field theory, we see the violation of the quasi-particle picture, okay? So this is the result, once again, for reflected entropy, and this dotted curve or dotted line represent what we expect from quasi-particle picture, okay? There are two cases we have to distinguish where in this case, distance is larger than LA or LV. And in this case, D is less than these two regions. In both cases, we see violation of the quasi-particle picture. In this case, this rise, plateau, fall picture, we don't see anything. We just see this reflected entropy stays zero in this case. In the right hand side, we see up until some time here, reflected entropy follows the prediction from the quasi-particle picture, but later time it violates this quasi-particle picture. Okay. Similar thing can be seen also in the mutual information. So part of this result was actually obtained before us. So this paper from 2015 for mutual information, they observe this flat result. And then I think this is one of the first paper which discusses the emergence of chaotic nature of conformal field theory in this mutual information. Okay, we did more precise calculation. We also saw in this regime D less than LA and LB, we see slightly different result, but still violates the quasi particle picture here. Okay, so in some sense, what's happening is that this entanglement we are expected to see from the quasi-particle picture in this pure or chaotic conformal field theory, we see less quantum entanglement. Okay, so some entanglement is missing or just simply don't appear in the complicated conformal field theory. Okay. Right. So once again, this is the result for mutual information and the reflected entropy. Here we focus on these regions because in this region where D is larger than LA and LB, mutual information and the reflected entropy, they show the same result. Whereas for this region where D is less than LA and LB, LA or LB, we still see the violation of the quasi-particle picture, but in this regime, mutual information, the reflected entropy shows very different behavior, so which is interesting. Okay, so this may tell us something about the correlation, type of the correlation we develop after global quantum quench in these theories. Okay, so once again, mutual information, but yeah, if you compare mutual information and the reflected entropy. Reflected entropy is expected to capture more classical correlation. So perhaps you may remember that reflected entropy is bounded from below by mutual information. So we capture more classical correlation by looking at this reflected entropy. So this surplus of entanglement we see the surplus of correlation we see in the reflected entropy, they may be just attributed to actually classical correlations in this type of more complicated conformal field theories. Whereas for the rational conformal field theory, we don't see such a difference between quantum and classical correlations. Okay. Good. Is there any question for this? Okay. Okay. I think I'm actually running out of time, maybe. But let me say now a few words about this Aluva-Calabrese relation. Okay. So, as it turns out, we can, in some sense, prove Aluva-Calabrese relation within the technique of conformal field theory without using quasi-particle picture. So here's a technique, here's a kind of quick sketch of the argument. So many calculations what we do in this type of quantities is to evaluate a certain kinds of 4 points or higher point correlation functions in conformal field theories. For example, for just the mutual information, we have to evaluate 4-point correlation function on upper half plane. Okay, and this correlation function can be decomposed into something we may call universal part, which is this part, and also theory dependent part, which I call G. Okay, so this universal part is universal in the sense that this part just relies on conformal symmetry. So this part is there and the same for any conformal field theory. Okay, whereas this part G depends on the type of conformal field theory, specific conformal field theory you are looking at. Okay, so if we just drop this theory dependent part, okay, and if you just count this part of the contribution, universal contribution, we immediately see that Aluva-Calabrese relation holds for negativity and mutual information and reflected entropy. Whereas this theory dependent part is zero, this G's conformal block. So this conformal block for this particular setup turns out to be zero for free fermion theory, for example. But this plays an important role in pure conformal field theory. So that's why we see a strong violation of the Aluva-Calabrese relation for these quantities. Okay. Yeah, okay, so I think I have 10 minutes left. So is there any question for global quench? Oh, okay. How do we take this question? So I don't know the protocol, but perhaps you can just unmute and they ask question.
Oh, yeah, I just want to make sure what's delta in the previous slide.
That's right, sorry, I didn't say that. So this delta is the dimension of these operators.
So it depends on the conformal theory.
Yeah, so these operators are something called twist operators. So yeah, exactly. So operator content depends on the particular theories, but these operators are there for any conformal Fourier series. Then, okay, so to be more precise, these operators are there in conformal Fourier theory once you deprecate your theory, and then it always has the same dimension. Okay, does it answer your question?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, are there other questions?
Hi, Shinsei. Could you elaborate a bit more why for a rational CFT, the contribution from the G part is zero?
Yeah, so this is certainly true for free fermion theory. Yeah, so actually I'm not entirely sure if this is zero for rational conformal theory. Most likely it's not. But in the Reiter-Kohn limit I'm talking about, this has to be very small. Okay, so the limit where this regularization parameter goes to zero.
So is it related to some like an analytical properties of this function G?
Yes, so that exactly. So that's what I'm alluded here. So in conformal theory, so in the end, question boils down to the properties of these conformal blocks, which enter into the calculation of these quantities. And then as it turns out for rational conformal Fourier series, these conformal blocks develop some sort of singularity once I send regularization parameter to zero, okay? And that singularity occurs in any conformal Fourier series, rational conformal Fourier series, okay. But for pure CFTs, as it turns out, they can evade such singularities. So that's why we don't see quasi-particle picture. That destroys quasi-particle pictures in pure conformal Fourier series. Okay.
I see. Thanks.
I think there is one more question.
One more question.
Hi, Shinsei.
Hi.
I'm not familiar with this membrane picture, but could you explain a little bit how what you see for pure CFT can be explained in this membrane picture?
Ah, okay. Right, so that's mostly by, I think, right now, mostly we just compare result. So we did this first for the operator entanglement. So let me take this example. So, take this picture, and then we use this known function for this Rhine tension, which is obtained by large Q. People compute this Rhine tension function by mapping the problem to the Stat-Mech problem. And then in this case, I think we have to take a large Q limit. Okay, but anyway, in large Q limit, this is a known function. So using this as an input, we draw these Rhines, okay? And then we optimize or extrematize this functional, which is just the integral over this Rhine tension along this Rhine. And then because of this different behaviors for V less than one and V larger than one, we basically reproduce these kinks. So that's for operator entanglement. So Yeah, so we compare result. We don't have a derivation of this line tension picture from CFD side.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, so we could also, actually, so yeah, I didn't have a slide here, but we can explain actually this behavior once again using line tension picture. So once again, CFD calculation and the expectation from the line tension picture agree. Okay, yeah, that's something I should have said. Okay. Are there other questions?
Can I ask one more question?
Okay.
I guess the membrane picture or line tension picture is not a single picture in the sense that it requires some other input or it's actually a family of pictures.
Okay, so what input do you have in mind?
Like the particular expression of the line tension, something like that?
Yeah, that's right. So that's what I'm saying. So here I have to use this particular line tension function to match our result with CFD.
Uh-huh, but yeah. Is this the only possible line tension function?
Yeah, so that's why I'm saying we don't have a proof, but so far the argument is just based on the comparison between two result, one from CFD side and from line tension picture with particular input. Yeah, one may ask, you know, what is it really this? Can we, yeah, that's a good question. I don't have a very good answer for now, but yeah, so far now it's just a comparison with this particular line tension function.
And this particular line tension function is from the citation on this slide?
Sorry, not in this. This is just, I just stole this picture from this paper. I believe it is obtained in one of the paper where they map the random unitary circuits to StatMech, and then they have, yeah, so we take that result and we take a large Q limit.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So is it possible to design a family of CFTs that interpolate from the rational CFTs to pure CFTs and see how the quasi-particle picture gradually evolves into the membrane picture?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. So I have focused on just these two cases, and then one may wonder, like you just asked, is there any other possibilities, or is there anything which can interpolate between these two behaviors? I don't have a short answer for this, but we have seen, so we did study, not in this paper, but we did study something like compactified boson, C equal one, but at irrational radius squared. Okay, so for rational radius squared, free bosons are, free boson theory is integrable, completely integrable. It's a U1 level K theory, but we can detune your radius to be very strange values such as pi. We actually took to be pi. Then we see behavior, something intermediate between these two. For example, for out of time order correlator, for pure CFT, you see Lyapunov type behavior. And the rational CFT, I don't remember, but for the irrational compactified boson, we get Lyapunov. We see the non-Lyapunov behavior, such as E2. I forgot. It's very strange function, which is neither rational CFT or pure CFT ones. Okay, so that may be one candidate.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yeah, so, but this is an interesting question which isn't well understood. Okay, so maybe for the remaining minutes, I just quickly go over local quench. So local operator quench, once again, for rational CFT, we see a Luba-Calabrese relation holds, and then we see this type of past behavior. We see a quick rise of the entanglement measure, and this height is given by the conformal, sorry, the quantum dimension of the operator you are using to hit your state. But for pure CFT, we don't see this behavior, but instead we see a logarithmic growth in this quantum entanglement measure. And once again, we can understand why quasi-particle picture breaks down in this local local operator quench setting. And as it turns out, there's an interesting mechanism which we can identify within conformal field theory. But I think thinking of time, I just, don't mention it. But it's related to the monodromy matrix of conformal field theories, as it turns out. So I also want to show you quickly some numerical result for the purpose of going beyond conformal field theory. So let me skip free fermion chain, which just confirms our expectation from rational CFT and quasi-particle picture. I think more interesting is our numerical result for spin chain. And we can tune these parameters to have integrable or chaotic quantum spin chain. Okay, we simulated both. So for integrable quantum spin chain, for negativity and so for negativity and the mutual information, we see this type of behavior where entanglement measure quickly rise and then try to sort of saturate at later time. So this isn't exactly this behavior, but it's similar in the sense that there's a very quick rise of the entanglement and then we saturate, okay? So that's something we also see in integrable quantum spin chain, but in this case, we don't assume any conformal symmetry. And there's also finite size effect, which is the caveat of the numerics, but nevertheless, we see this behavior. Another interesting aspect is this chaotic spin chain. So we now change parameters such that we destroy integrability. So then in the chaotic spin chain, we actually see a logarithmic growth of these quantum correlation. So once again, there's no conformal symmetry. We are not talking about conformal field theory here, just a quantum spin chain. But this logarithmic growth is rather similar to what we actually found in conformal field theory. So to summarize, I think we can learn quantum dynamics, although we have been using conformal field theory, and I think it's kind of fun to distinguish different conformal field theory by using these quantum entanglement measures. But I think these results may have implication for systems beyond just conformal field theories. Okay, so I think with that, I think I stop here. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Shinsei, for a very nice talk. So are there any more questions?
Can I ask a question?
Okay.
Sure, go ahead.
Hi, Shinsei, this is Tarun.
Yes.
I had a question about the very last slide when you showed the chaotic spin chain. I think my confusion has been, I looked at the paper also and I got a bit confused about it. So if I thought you are taking a ground state of a chaotic system and then doing a local quench and evolving and looking at entanglement growth, is that correct?
Yeah, local operator quench, yes.
Right. But if I look at that, if I think from the low energy effective theory of that spin model, either from the point of view of just low, because I'm in the ground state, I have to think about really low temperature, extremely low temperature physics, almost zero temperature, basically zero temperature. Then either that Ising spin chain, if it is not at the critical point, which is integrable, then it has a mass gap and it is like a basically integrable system. I think of like a basically like a massive 5-4 theory. So it looks integrable at ultra low energy. So how can show chaotic behavior? I think that was a confusion.
Yes, but I think this is the dynamic. So I guess I'm not sure. Okay, so that's a good point.
Dynamics. I'm thinking of, for example, if I just give you a gap theory.
Yes.
A gap scalar theory, and I look at, for example, any measure of quantum chaos at temperatures much less than the gap.
Right.
I would think it should, I mean, or even, I mean, at any temperature, I mean, as long as you're not exploring infinite temperature physics or something, you are at extremely low temperatures. So
yeah, so CFD result is at infinite temperature because I said
that's interesting. Yeah, I think the part about when you mentioned about all the stuff using irrational CFTs and all the calculations, they obviously, I mean, that of course, that just makes sense because there's no quasi particles. But here, because there have been a lot of results on spin chains and measures of chaos, and they, especially in this regime where there's a mass gap, often people find a lot of oscillations and all those features of integrability.
I see. Okay, so
you might remember this work where people try to explain oscillations in the spin chain using the bound state of some mesons or I don't know all that.
Right. Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. Yeah, so I think what you're saying is obviously a valid point. I don't know. Here I'm thinking this is just perhaps not captured by low temperature physics, but I have to think more. Yeah.
But I can just maybe one small, at least mine and my guess was that when you're in a finite type system, even a zero temperature looks like finite temperature because of one over n.
Right.
Because
right.
The gap, because you still have a, because the effective temperature could be like one over L, which is order one when L is order one. So then it may look like it's chaotic despite the fact that in the ground state it's not. Could that be one reason?
Maybe, yeah. So maybe finite side effect. Yeah, this is for 30 psi too, and obviously it's very small.
Right, okay, 30 is okay, large, yeah.
Is that, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know the answer. I was thinking about this and yeah.
Yeah, but maybe it's good to, you know, do more simulations on the, maybe try to test. You can even test the picture you said.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been
interesting. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Any more questions?
Yeah, one more question.
Yeah, just unmute yourself and ask.
It seems that the logarithmic growth and non-logarithmic growth in the integrable and the chaotic spin chain, I mean, the idea of these logarithmic or non-logarithmic growth depends on whether the quasi-particle picture breaks down or not, as far as I understood. But in case of these quasi-particle picture, it is not like break down immediately under the generic perturbation. But in case of integrability, usually like integral problem become quickly untractable under some generic perturbation. So how stable these are, argument is?
That's right. So that's maybe related to previous iteration. We start from, let's say we start from rational CFT, and then we can, can we add a perturbation such that we destroy rationality, and then can we go into different regime? Or that's a good question, but once again I'm not I don't know. It may be possible to have some sort of crossover, but basically here I just focused on two limits.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Well, if not, let's so thank you, Shinsei, again for a very nice talk, and thanks everyone for attending, and we will see you next week.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.